Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the NXT 2.0 review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Sidgwick from What Culture, to review everything that happened on last night's episode of NXT 2.0. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review NXT 2.0, but also Monday Night Raw, SmackDown, AEW Dynamite, AEW Rampage, pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup the week complete with a bigger quiz, of course, on Wrestle Culture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Sidgwick to review NXT 2.0. Our well wishes go to Michael Hanford in his recovery from a mystery ailment.
He's fine.
He's fine. Don't worry about it. But anyway,
he's 100% fine.
What did you make of this, well, jam-packed episode of NXT?
Not much at all, if I'm being perfectly honest. The one wrestling match that I thought had the potential to be really, really good was good. Some of the angles were dreadful. Some of the promos were abysmal. I'm kind of looking forward to tearing it to pieces, to be perfectly honest. The show was absolutely terrible. I measure the success of this show on whether I can smile perversely at the nonsense, and there was a little bit of that this week, so I was happy.
Yeah, it was a weird show. I said this when I came in. It felt as long as Raw, purely because so much stuff happened. When I was compiling my notes, I thought, right, okay, and then obviously then we had Roderick Strong versus Bron Breakker in the main event. There was still like three segments or matches or stuff that went in between those bits that I remembered.
When Grizzled Young Veterans and Jack of Time came out for their match, I'm thinking, oh, well, I've seen enough at this point. Come on, wrap it up. I said it yesterday, like, if this was an hour, it'd be the best show on the week, ironically.
Yes. So this week's show opened with the heel, the lead heel from last week, Grayson Waller, and his arrival to the building. They recapped, obviously, him ruining Johnny Gargano's farewell. And he arrived at the building for a crowd in the parking lot to boo him out of the parking lot, basically. Chanted that he sucks. And before we were informed we're going to hear from him later on the show. Before all that, though, it's time to start with the no holds barred match between Duke Hudson and Cameron Grimes, baby, to the moon. Big grudge match, this, of course. Duke Hudson supposedly got his head shaved at War Games, but we haven't seen that chrome dome quite yet. He comes out with that wig and the amateur wrestling headgear that holds it in place. Cameron Grimes came out first and just could tell where this was immediately heading. Went under the ring, got out loads of plunder, trash can lids, kendo sticks, etc. And that's what factors into the match quite early on. Cameron Grimes wailing on him with a trash can lid. The brawl just started outside the ring. And yeah, lots of weapon stuff early on. Hudson gets Cameron Grimes up for a razor's edge on the floor, but Grimes counters it to send Hudson into the barricade. As they fight, though, in the ring, Hudson catches Grimes with a uranage onto a unfolded chair, which looked like it absolutely sucked, if I'm perfectly honest. When we come back from the break, there is a poker table set up in the ring. They tease a superplex through it, but Grimes manages to counter it, send Hudson off the turnbuckle, and then leap over the poker table with a flying crossbody to get a near fall on Duke Hudson. They trade some near falls. Hudson then blocks a cave-in, catches Cameron Grimes, and power bombs him through the poker table. But Grimes just manages to get his shoulder up at the last second. So Hudson, realizing his opportunity, goes under the ring and pulls out some hair clippers. He's going to get some revenge for what happened at War Games, but then he sort of becomes weirdly obsessed with them. He sets himself up in position to shave Cameron Grimes' head, but this psychotic stare at the clippers is broken when Grimes kicks him in the face, hits him with a poison rana that sets Duke Hudson up sitting in another steel chair that's in the ring, and he gets hit with a cave-in whilst sitting on the chair. 1-2-3, Cameron Grimes wins, and then just to put a nice cherry on the icing on the cake, Grimes whips the wig off Hudson's head to reveal his baldness for all to see.
I'll be nice about this in a second, but I had some problems with the construction and the tone of the match. Like, there's a way to do a pretty violent comedy match. I've seen it done several times over the past however many years. I didn't get enough comedy. It felt like the guy is working spots, some of which look incredibly painful, looking like an idiot. So it just felt like dissonant. The experience was dissonant. They could have, like, used the wig way more to set up violent plunder spots. So you got, like, some black comedy notes. Because that's the only way you could have done it. Like, cruelty, but funny cruelty. Like, if you had a... If Cameron Grimes, for example, had, like, went to go for the wig, both hands immediately go on Duke Hudson's head to try and fix it in place. Then he gets whacked with the sticks.
Nice.
And then he falls, like, he blunders and falls backwards through a table. Just, like... That's off the top of my head. It was a straight-laced plunder brawl worked with someone with a wig on.
Yes.
For too much of the match. So it was a bit weird in that respect. Two things I'll put over before we move on. He went full big, pretty much. He didn't go full like Haaland in terms of like light bouncing off that dome. But he near enough bigged it to the
fair
point
play,
where, yeah, fair play. Like, he's a handsome guy. He's not going to look as handsome as he could for the next however many months of his future. He committed to the bit. He can't not put that over. The finish was great.
The cave-in's always good.
The timing's great on the cave-in. Like, I don't think the chair being under him made it any more painful, but the timing to do the poison rana for him to fall into the chair, into the cave-in, like, that is what you want out of a plunder brawl. You want the use of weaponry to look totally seamless. Mm. The less really busy, obvious assembly, the better. And they worked that spot to perfection. And Duke Hudson, like, tall guy who can take a bump like that, all the credit in the world to him. I just wish they'd had more fun with what couldn't be a really serious match. They might as well have had played with it a little bit more.
Maybe, like, I don't know. I don't know what weapon you'd shove in there. Maybe a kendo stick, but, like, forcing that underneath the headgear so he's, like, got it stuck on his head.
Yeah.
I don't really know.
It could have had... It should have been a comedy match given the fact that it looked like a punchline. And the poker table was just weird. Like, they played poker to begin all of this. It's like, I know that, but it just was distracting.
Why was one under this... The ring.
When you ask that question, Wilborn, you then ask, why aren't normal tables under the ring? And then you have these, like, really distracting things that you don't want to think about when you're watching some violence.
Yeah. Mixed emotions about this, because I completely agree with you that they should have had more fun with it. I think maybe the reason why I'm giving this more of a pass, A, ghoulish intrigue with people getting put through poker tables and that urinagi through a chair.
Yeah, it looked wicked.
And... just pure relief that Cameron Grimes didn't lose. Because I was like, oh, when he got put through the poker table, I was like, well, looks like we're going to continue this bloody feud or they're going to have to go 50-50. Again, mixed emotions, though, because he wins this. And I have, as you all know, this is a football fan. It's the hope that kills you.
Yep.
I see that finish and think, oh, God, I'd love for him to be in a title match. But...
he exists to, if not Duke Hudson, like, if they continue to have Cameron Grimes win little mini programs like this, he could be Bron Breakker's, one of his opponents when he has his run, that sort of thing.
I don't want him to be Bron Breakker's first, because then he definitely ain't winning the title. I want at least a smidgen of a chance that he could shock Bron Breakker, even if it's just hot potato in the title. Anyway, lots to get through on this show, so we'll move on. We're backstage with Cora Jade. She's being asked about the unfinished business with Dakota Kai. They've got a match later on. She says, look, there is obviously problems that I've got with Dakota Kai, but I'm very excited because I've been medically cleared after all the arm and shoulder stuff following War Games. In comes Dakota Kai, and my heart breaks for her because she's so much better than all this.
Yeah.
But she's given the crazy gimmick, and she says, oh, you see, this is what Raquel Gonzalez does. She latches on someone, makes them do all the dirty work, and then she gets the glory. And Jade says, thanks, Mum. And then I don't need the advice, and she storms off to get ready for a match and to continue her win streak, as she says. And Kai freaks out.
Well, I really want to talk about this because it's insane. Right. Is the implication here that at being called Mom,
yeah,
by Cora Jade, in that moment, did Dakota Kai literally confuse herself for Cora Jade's mom because she's Dad Joker, baby, and she's a bit unhinged?
I think so.
So she now thinks, I was left speechless by this. My jaw dropped. It's not even her mum. Somebody else's mum. I don't even just like. Did I give birth to Cora Jade? And I was like 11 or however many years. What was this?
I hate WWE giving. Well, I hate actually not even WWE. I hate any wrestling show that gives women crazy gimmicks because they all suck.
Yes.
So just. Not in real life, in kayfabe, give Dakota Kai a head injury so she can forget all this bollocks.
Yes.
Move on. One thing I can't move on from because it's burnt into my brain was the pre-tape segment with Josh Broggs and Brogan Johnson. What was this? Last week they got those tickets because they won a match or something, and then Kane Carter and Casey Catanzaro, who just love to party, came through and we got two spare tickets. Oh, we'll take them. And the women had pulled up in a truck, and their truck's nicer than Broggs and John's truck. And then they go to a festival. A
country music festival.
And the boys dance, and the girls line dance, and the boys are infatuated / impressed / stunned by the girls. And then it just ends.
The ending of this was particularly strange, perhaps even stranger than the ending to the Dakota Kai Cora Jade segment. Because the sort of Catanzaro and
Ken Carter
were dancing, right?
Yes.
They disappeared out of the shot. Kind of zooms in on the lads, and they're like, it's the implication that they just started getting down and dirty. And Broggs and Johnson were like, oh. Can't believe this is bloody happening in front of me. In front of me.
I couldn't believe that. What I got from it was them being like, oh my God, are these girls hot? Yes, they're hot. They were hot before they in line dancing. It's Kane Carr and Casey Catanzaro.
The fact that you couldn't see them, were they about to, you know, it's very sexy. It's very sex infested, this show.
Festivals love a bit of sex as well. Sex at a festival, very popular. Not my kind of thing. Needs cleanliness for me. Fitted sheets.
Just do it on the first day.
Good point.
If you do it on the first day of a festival.
Go glamping, do it on the first day.
No one's doing it on the Sunday, but you know, the first day.
Yeah. A few dark fruits down your neck, anything can happen.
And then sometimes it does. So maybe they were.
I just.
Like, they dance so good. Was that the implication?
Absolutely no idea.
This is the worst show of all time.
Anyway, down comes Grayson Bloody Waller to explain himself for what happened with him and Gargano. Boos, asshole chants, all the usual stuff you'd expect. Gets on the mic. He's really enjoying this, obviously. He says, a wise man once said, you can never fail if you bet on yourself. Oh, that's right. I'm not doing the accent for this because this is serious. He says, he thought it was a beautiful speech by Johnny Gargano, and he nearly had a tear in his eye, but Johnny overstayed his welcome. And he wanted to thank the fans as if you people have ever done anything. He says, last week, he personally, by himself, did what he said he was going to do. He had all the views. He was trending everywhere. that's what happens when you bet on yourself. He gets them to play the footage again. The crowd boos, and he says, well, didn't you bloody like it? he says, let's be real, though. Last week, he cemented himself as the NXT superstar by ending the career of an NXT legend. What did all these fans do? They complained online about someone that's more successful than them. Who wrote that line? He goes on the screen to show loads of tweets from people being like, bloody Grayson Waller. One of which is Wade Barrett calling him a piece of sh, but also saying he quite likes him because he's the heel commentator. But apparently Grayson Waller didn't care about that second half because he says, Wade, it's not 2010 and I don't care about what you think of me. For a split second, for just a minuscule moment, I thought, oh my God, he's going to take the headset off and batter this twat. He didn't. Instead, Grayson Waller continued by berating Vic Joseph, saying, look at what I did to your best friend right in front of you, and you didn't do a single thing. That shows what kind of man you are. Welcome to WWE commentary, Vic Joseph. That's the real.
Yep.
Now you've completed the to-do list or the bucket list of things that they have to do to you if you're a commentator. He says he doesn't need friends, family, or any of the fans. The only thing he needs to get to top of this industry is Grayson Waller.
We might gloss over certain segments later on. I don't know what your plans are for this review, but for those who haven't watched the show, and you probably haven't watched the show, you listen to this kind of podcast, so you have to prevent yourself from watching the show. So between the entrance into the whatever the NXT 2.0 arena, I think it's called, mm-hmm. this promo, and there were various segments later on where Waller was giving it Billy Big Bollocks backstage, and everyone, irrespective of alignment,
yeah.
was like, no, you're a prick, you shouldn't have done that to Gargano. The idea here is to present Grayson Waller as the biggest heel on the brand, who's just committed the most unthinkable transgression, just lower than dirt, no respect. A vulture, basically. That's his character. He's the most hated man in NXT. That's the route they're going with. Them taking this kind of turn with his character just kind of ruthlessly undermines the entire operation. Because he got his boos and all the rest of it, but you can't possibly be that hated. And when you try so hard to make him that loathed a figure, it just underscores how nobody's that loved or liked or beloved. In front of this minuscule, very performative crowd when they can't be arsed and they're just flat, like nothing resonates as an emotional reaction. And it just, it's brought into focus how fake and OTT all of this was.
It was very OTT throughout this show with him. But you can see what they're doing. They're presumably setting him up.
They're going all the way with someone, for Christ's sake. That's something.
I feel like he, you know, I pitched this yesterday, but I feel like it's going to go the way that we probably anticipated beforehand, i.e. one assumes Bron Breakker wins the title at New Year's Evil, and maybe Grayson Waller's next in line, and they're just trying to keep him,
like,
trying to keep that heat, as we often hear about, for him going in the meantime.
Because we talked about this yesterday. NXT 2.0 was fascinating that it's rubbish, but at the same time, it's not altogether inelegant with how they plot the threads. The way they gathered everything together to arrive at Black and Gold versus 2.0 at War Games is quite good. Going down the line here, you can realistically see a scenario where Bron Breakker beats Tommaso Ciampa, and they earn each other's respect in the end.
Yeah.
They shake hands. Waller tries to attack Breakker. You could have Ciampa and Breakker versus Waller and somebody in a tag to set up Waller versus Breakker. Like, they genuinely think about this stuff. It's just the curve. This is the kind of thing any pro wrestling company should do.
Plus, outside of the big table spot from War Games, name me a move that Grayson Waller does.
Oh, I don't. I can't really
think. He powerbombed Gargano through the table, but that could just be to put him through a table. It's probably the safest way of doing
it. I think Waller's a half-decent spot monkey, but the problem with being a spot monkey is that he can barely recall the spots.
Exactly. Right, backstage with a guy, more of this man on the show, Malcolm Bivens. He's bigging up Roderick Strong ahead of his match with Bron Breakker, of course. He says, Bron isn't the workhorse of NXT or the champion. That is Roderick Strong. Oh, and by the way, Ivy Niles here to crack some skulls, and she's just about to head out for her match, so he walks out with her. And then, to the surprise of all of us, lashing out with Last Legend returned.
I need to bury something first, pal.
Oh, sorry.
WWE in NXT, just ignore what I just said a minute ago about how it's weirdly, vaguely competent in a level that it really should just be the norm, this kind of booking, but it's WWE, so you never give them credit for it. This brand and the writing on it is so incompetent that they managed to get a cliche wrong, right? Roderick Strong said, we're going to divide and conquer tonight. So when you divide and conquer, right, you take an enemy, a collective enemy,
yeah,
you split them apart strategically, and then you pick them off one by one by one. That's what divide and conquer means. Yeah. Am I right or am I going crazy?
No, that's exactly right. That's what Edge tried to do to Evolution, for example.
So you divide your collective enemy and you conquer them individually. That's, I was going crazy because that's what divide and conquer means.
Yeah.
Not according to Roderick Strong, or more accurately, the writer who scripted Roderick Strong's line, who seems to believe that divide and conquer means we'll split apart.
We'll
divide and then conquer. No! No, that's not how it works!
Anyway, Lashing Out with Lash Legends back. Yes, which means, well, not next, well, you can do it next week. I'm not here. I couldn't give a toss. Zeitgeist Heist, back in the game, baby. That means, is that four weekly games potentially now?
Yes.
Oh, my days. We're barely having enough time to preview the matches on the review, but still. Not a great loss. I thought it was dead, and apparently they just went, well, God, leave the people wanting more. We'll just not air it for 7 weeks.
Maybe Uncle Dave used me as a source when I was just pulling something out of my ass.
Yeah.
It hasn't been on. It must have been cancelled.
So her guests this week were Jacket Time, and this was, and no one called it, Where's Wendy for the week? Wendy Chu or Karen Q or whatever they're bloody called. We don't know, basically. Wandered past. Midway through a fucking talk show, to be like, brilliant, what a selling point before that begins, by the way. She walks past and Lash Legend throws her a bit of a look and she asks Jacket Time their secret and they announce it is, in fact, Style Strong, of course, and Kamin's got one of those snazzy jackets on, and she asks what's going on with the grizzled young veterans, and Ikemen Jiro says, oh, it's a sensitive operation, and Kushida is desperately trying to take this seriously, says they attacked last week, they shouldn't be underestimated, in Japanese with subtitles, they say they're their superior team, they're going to wipe the floor with grizzled young veterans. Lash Legend looks confused, presumably she doesn't speak Japanese and she couldn't see the subtitles. It's all a bit awkward, so Ikemen Jiro just goes, it's Jacket Time! Which is a bit like me, where I'm like, oh, I don't know where this point's going. I'll just do a funny voice. Huge bap, and that was that.
When Lash Legend goes, Ikemen Jiro, you are my hero. I want to die. I want to die. I don't know why this is a thing.
I'm trying to avoid even mentioning it.
I hate it, right? And on the subject of things that I hate, it's so not on the way in which NXT 2.0 presents Asian people.
Nope.
It is absolutely not on whatsoever. They are comedic idiots, or they are mystical.
Or they're friends because they're Asian.
Yeah, it's every single cliche under the goddamn sun. And one of the low-key worst parts of this is Ikemen Jiro's line. Was it? It's a sensitive operation.
Yes.
Right. I'm telling you now, this is so bad. Right. When you watch, like, an 80s film that happens to have, like, I'm thinking of E.T.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm thinking of Breakfast at Tiffany's.
That's not an 80s film.
No, but I'm thinking in terms of a bad portrayal of an Asian.
Oh, person. Right, okay. In, like, the 80s film, when you have, like, the non-human character.
Okay.
Whether it's E.T. or Short Circuit, right? Or the Terminator.
Right.
The cliche in the 80s film is that this not human character picks up a figure of speech from one of the human characters and to convey, they are connected, they have formed a bond. The non-human character will repeat the thing they've picked up from the human character.
Elliot, I am chuffed to little min balls.
Phone home.
Yeah.
What's the Terminator's thing?
Didn't he say...
What he gets from the human.
Yeah. He gets the thumbs up.
The thumbs up. He learns that. Yeah. And Johnny Five's still alive, whatever. I don't know if he can talk. I don't know if he's seen Short Circuit.
No, me neither.
That's two 80s for me, and I'm a big 80s maniac. But you get what I'm saying.
You go to watch that, and then you move to Tremors, and it just...
Ikemen Jiro, who can speak English,
yeah,
is now repeating things that English people have said. It's, he's beginning to understand.
Yeah.
It's a sensitive operation. I recall this in my distant inhuman memory. It's absolutely appalling. I dread to think what an Asian... Like, bear in mind, a few months ago, their food was considered as disgusting as an alien fetus by friggin', what's her name?
Was it...
Zoe Stark.
Oh, Zoe Stark, yeah.
Horrendous.
Yeah. I'll look forward to more lashing out in Lash Legend next week.
Jesus Christ.
A rapid squash match for Ivy Nile next. She faced Amari Miller. Chucked her about a bit. Choked her away in the corner. Miller did get some offense in and caught her for quite a few roll-ups. She also hit a drop kick, but when she went for the spin wheel kick, that missed. Nile spine-busted her ass and then got her with the neck crank to win. They're hot on Ivy Nile, and you can almost see why.
Almost. It wasn't quite Zack Sabre Jr., if I'm being perfectly bluntly honest. And there was one roll-up attempt that went through treacle, pure slow-motion stuff. But, you know, otherwise, there was slick elements. There's the bare bones of a pro wrestler in Ivy Nile, so...
She passes the airport test for me.
Every time she looks like a killer.
Backstage, we have an interview... Followed by sort of it, not an interruption because it was the interview had finished. Followed by another one, but I'll allow it because of what we got. So Zion Quinn's being asked about Elektra's intentions because of what happened in the match with the Brass Knucks last week, and he says, "I run it straight. I know the rules of the game. It's game on." And I was like, "Yeah, I don't care." And then Robert Stone's there. He stops McKenzie from throwing back to the commentators. He said he's tired of the disrespect from everyone, basically. He is going to be taken seriously. But then Michael Sidgwick, just when I thought, okay, that was bloody pointless, we hear...
Hang on a second.
Why is Steve Austin? They think he's Steve Austin, but he isn't Steve Austin.
He's getting his character.
I like 12-ounce curls, Kyle. I got heart. Get that mic over here. Last week was just the first body to break. Next week, it continues. I'm gonna...
And then I'm not gonna do this near the mic because it'll just pop everyone's headphones and stuff. He smashes his hand into his fist as he's doing this.
I'm gonna smash him. I'm gonna beat him in the ground. Why? Because I can. And if you got a problem, say it to my face.
Is that skit we performed gone out yet?
I don't know.
Well, not spoil it. It's very good.
You can say it. It doesn't matter.
We performed a skit, me and Wilborn.
To shill for the book.
To shill for the old books. And basically, Wilborn was playing with some action figures. Going, wait, I'm going to beat you up. That's what Von Wagner did with his hands. I'm going to bang him. I'm going to smash him. And it's because... I can. He's so weird.
He's really weird.
He's the best weird guy of all time, maybe.
He passes the airport test, but not for the reasons for Ivy Nile. Ivy Nile, I'm like, what could she do to someone if you put him in a ring with her? Him, I'm like, what's going on with that guy and where's he going? Where's he flying? I'm going to get on the same plane as him.
Why is he not a flight risk? I mean, at the very least, have turned the dude heel. At the very least, that's what he's...
Yeah, because he's not endearing any stretch of the imagination.
Got one more exercise, Kyle. Couple of 12-ounce curls.
Anyway, we've got Harlan...
He's not intimidating when he's simultaneously the most and least scary person alive.
Yeah.
Like this weird energy, like, imagine being stuck in the lift with Von Wagner.
Like, he smells like.
I'm more concerned about this theoretical scenario playing out in my head in which I'm stuck in the lift with Von Wagner.
Hold that lift for me. Oh, no.
What am I going to talk about with you? I don't want to be in your presence, but at the same time, like, you could probably chin us, but I'd rather take my chances with him than some other wrestlers.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Anyway, we've got Hardland's debut to come. Before that, Joe Gacy sort of hyping him up, telling him not to be afraid of the person of who he is. And before we get the debut, we've got to catch up with MSK and their shaman, Riddle. They're going through the fanny pack. Is it going to be drugs in there? Well, it turns out no. Riddle takes out what's in there. There's scissors, some batteries, a single earbud, glasses, and then he reaches into the bag and somehow pulls out a baseball bat. I have no idea what this was. There's also a traffic cone in there and, inexplicably, John Cena spinner US title.
Which they're mark out for because everyone's a mark in this promotion.
Anyway, he says this is sort of symbolic, Michael Cedric, you see. This is, they're cluttering up their lives. They need to focus on one thing only, and that's regaining those NXT tag team titles. And when they say, well, how on earth do we let go of everything? He reaches into the fanny pack and pulls out a scooter, and then they reach in as well. He says, you've got to dig deep. They reach in as well. They've all got scooters now, and they ride off into the sunset,
this
I suppose.
Is an absolute waste of my goddamn time. What a waste of my goddamn time. You know what I hate more about the stupid prop comedy, about the on-the-nose symbolism. Your life's cluttered. Like, is it? Yeah, you know, just wrestle. Sake.
What's it? You lost one match.
I know. It's absolutely hideous stuff. They're trying to get them over with the youth as...
They were already over with the youth.
Well, not the guys in the thing. They're in the old venue. Anyway, so they're trying to get them over. I understand why they're doing it. We've got some stoner lads, and you know, it's... what was big in the 70s? Stoner comedy. When we did have a little brief reprisal before everyone just realised it was lame, Harold and Kumar go to White Castle, which isn't that bad.
Yeah, I quite like that.
You know what I hate about quote-unquote stoner comedy, right? You're talking about drugs. Like, yeah. Talk about it out loud, you pricks.
Also, like you, I think you've reiterated on many occasions now, a lot of this is legal yes, in many states.
Yes, you don't have to be like, the subtext of us laughing and, you know, hey, man, what time did you get up this morning? Look a bit tired. I've just been having loads of bongs. I hate it, man.
I genuinely think as well, because the writers, I guarantee, are clueless. They're going to write something at one point. Unless MSK say something about, like, that's not how people talk. They're going to have them saying, like, hey, man, do you want to smoke a weed? Because they've got no fucking idea how actually to do this. It's like, it's a green leaf, isn't it? Get him some hemp gear and have done with it, all right?
Oh, don't give them ideas.
Yeah. Anyway, should we talk about Hardland's destructive debut?
Yes, please.
Poor Guru Raj was fed to him. They lock up. I mean, I did quite like it in terms of just like, fucking hell, mate, all right. Lock up. And he just slams him onto the mat. And he just starts battering him, slamming him up and down. And then some real, I did like that. I mean, I'd never want to be anywhere near this. But just the, like, I can have some of my elbow in your face, just grinding his forearm across his face. Gacy's just, you know, his heart eyes are watching this monster of his. He grabs Guru by the hair, picks him up one-handed. Guru tries to fight off, swing some punches, but he just gets picked up, slammed down, 1, 2, 3. And Harlan just shambles over to where Joe Gacy is, who says, do you feel better now? Harlan shakes his head
no.
And goes back and just wrecks Raj after the bell. pummeling him until basically, well, referees come down, officials trying to separate them, but it's not over until Gacy effectively says, all right, that's enough, and they head off. And later on, they just show them being sort of led out whilst the referees are yelling in their face for what's happened. And he chucks poor Brian Bloody Kendrick down the stairs. Poor bastard. What did you make of his... I was listening out. I don't listen to the commentary very much. I was listening out for the Vince destructive debut. What did you make of it?
Let's first of all shout out Hamflet. He said that they were absolutely 100% nailed on to do something that Brock Lesnar had done.
Yeah.
He said he didn't know if it was going to be that weird animalistic shriek or whatever. They were going to do something Lesnar-y. And they, in fact, copied a famous Brock Lesnar angle. So my esteemed colleague got that one completely right. More than adequate squash. The issue with WWE in particular doing squash matches is that they don't necessarily feel too dangerous. Decent presence on the lad. Like the finisher, he looked a bit wobbly in the leg before he executed it. But, you know, the demeanor, it was a good, I think, version of a John Laurinaitis muscle monster from the mid-2000s. Like, this is one of the better John Laurinaitis guys.
And you can see them booking him and Breaker together.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think the guy's potentially got talent. This is probably too small a snapshot to analyze it. But... at least do a sound effect on the bloody splat.
Yeah.
I didn't really get anything of that.
Poor Brian Kendrick as well. I love Brian Kendrick, man. London and Kendrick were one of my favourite tag teams back in the day. I played as London once. I got a 2K game. And I loved London and Kendrick so much. I was like, you know what? It's time for Paul London to be world champion. And they, poor bastard, they'd set him up. So, like, I think early in one of the matches, or I just was like, oh, I'm just going to play as Paul London in a rumble to get myself used to him or whatever. You know, when you do the Irish whip, Paul London was so weak that you do an Irish whip and they do that thing where you just stopped and then the bloke pulled you in and just clotheslined you. So I was like, well, no world title reign for you then, brother.
Oh, man. Paul London needs to be contacted yesterday to do some kind of open challenge in AEW. Even on a one-off basis.
Yes.
Like, I would have Sammy Guevara versus Paul London all day long.
London and Kendrick back together, get them tagging. I loved them so much. Anyway, lots to talk about today. We have the arrival of L.A. Knight. He drives up in that car of his. Fair play to him. They've established the car as a thing.
He's an idiot, though.
Well, yeah.
Why would he leave it there?
So he drives up. He's asked about Grayson Waller. And he says, Grayson Waller, who? Oh, yeah, the guy who did a half-cool move at War Games and then got pissed at him when the hot chick left with me last week, basically. And he says, have Waller come find me or tell me where Waller is. And he walks into the arena late for work. Honestly, timekeeping on some of these superstars is shocking. And then we got Dakota Kai versus Cora Jade. She did ride the skateboard briefly. Get rid of it. Just get rid of it. It's laughable. I mean, I enjoy it every time. But it is preposterous.
Oh, yeah, you enjoy it for the wrong reasons. She just, like, three scoots, picks it up, and then just runs.
I can't think of any other gimmick that someone would bring out and just carry that isn't something you automatically carry. It's like coming out on rollerblades and just going, right, take them off. You know, and that would make more sense because you can't wrestle in rollerblades.
Yeah.
And she's going to break her neck. So, just get rid of it. Anyway, match itself has Mandy Rose on commentary, who quite rightly, by the way, points out, why does she bring a skateboard to ringside? If she was a heel, that'd make even more sense.
Yes.
Doesn't make any sense. Anyway, doesn't matter.
It's not even her skateboard.
It's not even her skateboard.
It's Darby Allin's skateboard.
So, they fight into the corner. Cora Jade's bad shoulder, you know, she's medically clear, but still a glaringly obvious weak point, gets sent into the buckle. Kai's going for an arm bar, but she misses the running boot in the corner. That allows Cora Jade to fight back, but then Dakota Kai hits a backbreaker for a two count, swinging reverse DDT, near fall off the back of that as well. And then she inexplicably decides to go underneath the ring to get her shovel, because that's a thing now. Of course, when she gets in the ring, the referee goes, what the fuck are you doing? You can't use a fucking shovel. It's a wrestling match. Takes it off her. In the midst of all this, Cora Jade rolls her up. 1, 2, 3. And yet again, you pointed this out on Raw with Bianca Belair. Cora Jade's just like, yeah! You know, normally, roll up, right, better get out of the ring because I've just pissed off this heel. Not this time. Yeah, I've won the match! Oh, surprise, surprise, she's been jumped from behind by Dakota Kai, beats her down. Raquel Gonzalez runs out to make the save and they fight off after that. Then Cora Jade sees a couple of the other members of Toxic Attraction, Gigi Dolin and JC Jane, come out. Turns her attention to them, and then obviously Mandy Rhodes slides in from commentary, attacks her, and hits a shoulder breaker to re-injure Cora Jade.
Oh, all of this was horrible. The match itself was barely an improvement on the inexplicable one-minute disaster they had a few weeks back. Like, they recovered to do something somewhat acceptable by the finish, but the very first thing Cora Jade does, and I'm not burying Cora Jade, she shouldn't be on television yet. She's got loads of promise, but absolutely, she shouldn't be on television yet.
She's on like 20-odd, isn't she?
Yeah, the first thing she does is not a head scissors, it's like an elbow scissors.
Like, oh, she, I remember that, yeah.
Completely misses it. Dakota Kai has to do like a rolling bump because otherwise, because it was in the script. It's in the script of a predetermined wrestling match and my instant thing is, oh, it's fake, so I can't get brought into it whatsoever.
My thought process is immediately, maybe Dakota Kai should win this then.
Yeah.
She can't execute that. Rather than having Dakota Kai and all these people, as I keep mentioning, bump all over the place to make these green people shine, maybe have the green people lose, but learn from it, and have the people who can wrestle be in the fucking title picture.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Dakota Kai is an idiot. And I know she's crazy, but I just don't think of her. Oh, she's crazy. That's why she did that. I think she's an idiot. That's why she did
crazy,
that.
But if she's crazy, why don't you immediately go for the... why don't you go like, I'll beat her down, then I'll get the...
Yeah, that's
trouble.
Rational thought process stuff. So she's an idiot for thinking, oh, bloody use it. I can't do accents.
You can do Imperium. There's no
I can't do Imperium. I can't do Imperium. So she's an idiot for thinking she can use the weapon. She gets beat after looking like an idiot. I really want to watch your grudge match now, heel. I really want to watch you really attempt to damage someone in a brutal grudge match now, because you really look capable of that, having watched this. Stupid, stupid Cora Jade looks like an idiot for over-celebrating when she knows she's in the vicinity of a crazy person who's wielding a weapon. So the two big women's matches, singles, on the horizon are Dakota Kai versus Raquel Gonzalez, Cora Jade versus Mandy Rose, yeah. And there's an idiot in both of them. Great booking. Absolutely top-tier booking from the stupid Fed.
Yeah, and also, didn't when Dakota Kai, you know, early stages of going crazy, didn't she? Was it Cora Jade she beat down and then she was like about to twat her with a skateboard and then she had a conflict of... Not conflict of interest, that's not the word I'm looking for, but she was conflicted.
Yeah, in a conflict, in a turmoil.
So why? So Raquel Gonzalez is going to batter in a street fight because she's going to hesitate and Raquel Gonzalez is going to take her head off.
Don't know why she had to hesitate the first time. There's the booking on the show. I hate myself when I say, I know the good Bron Breaker. It's rubbish.
They were brawling in the parking lot later. But
you know, Vince Russo's got so much to answer for, because when you see something that's vaguely connected to something that makes a bit of sense to 3 months. Nowadays, a lot of people, and I still get caught in this trap, think, oh, it's good booking. No, it isn't. It's rubbish. It's just not been through so bad.
Right, we go backstage. There is Tiffany Stratton. We still haven't seen her face. She walks past Grayson Waller. She says, my dad tells me you're bad. I've been practicing that all week. All week I've been practicing my Tiffany Stratton. I get one line.
It's fantastic. Mm. It's absolutely tremendous.
Oh, actually... Just to revisit another point as well. Here's Io Shirai to rant in Japanese. And he goes, I don't know what she was going on about, but I think she likes me.
It's absolutely horrendous. If you're going to do the bit, right, where everyone hates Grayson Waller, irrespective of alignment, because that means if the heels don't like him, that must be, he must be the worst of the lot. And you hate him as a result. I get it. I was about to say... Maybe don't do the heel you haven't even debuted yet, who's still doing the rich bitch asshole vignettes, because that just makes her less of a heel. In theory, if anything matters, and it doesn't. I was going to say, why not have one of the established people you're not really looking to push via vignettes like you are with Tiffany Stratton? I can't do that. The worst, but like they're all like 2 weeks old, haven't done the vignettes, so what does it fucking matter?
I like the show came next for me. Andre Chase versus Tony D'Angelo.
I mean, it kind of sucked.
Yeah, but that's the wrestling aside, Michael Sidgwick. So D'Angelo dominates early on. Of course he does. After Andre Chase gets in his face, waving his papers and what have you. Head slams into the turnbuckle. Belly-to-belly suplex to send Chase to the outside. Chase comes back in, though. Cheap shots D'Angelo. Andre Chase is fast becoming one of my favourite things. I keep saying this. Cheap shots D'Angelo, then immediately turns to his university students and basically says, I didn't cheat there. Just completely no-sells the fact that he's just cheated. Neckbreaker gets a one count on the cover. Gets some mounted punches, stomps to D'Angelo. He spells out Chase U with the stomps and then doesn't just do, you know, C-H-A-S-E. He does C-H-A-S-E-E-U. What does it spell? Like, what age of the students he's teaching, regardless? D'Angelo fights back and does the sort of hockey fight, pull the sweater over his head so he can just punch him in that.
Should probably stop wearing it if he's a professor.
Yeah. Also, I sometimes think about this. Like, I always used to think this when Dean Ambrose was wrestling in jeans. I must be... I'd just be crying out. I mean, my body's not good enough. But if I was a wrestler, I'd be like Trunks. Because you must get sweltering in anything other than regular wrestling gear.
The gimmick jeans, but like, even that being the case, you still get the feeling.
All I think of is...
I play football in your jeans.
Yeah, and then having to like peel them off. Yeah. That's horrible. Anyway, D'Angelo pulls his sweater over his head, punches him a few times, Northern Lights suplex, picks him back up, twisting Fisherman's Buster, 1, 2, 3... He's got the victory we all knew he was going to get.
Yeah, this is a bit rubbish. Once again, it's kind of ironic that Tony D'Angelo is a mob guy because he wrestles like IRS. How are you doing?
Right. Then it was the post-match where Tony D'Angelo gets on the mic and he says, in the words of my immortal paisan, Tony Bennett, Tony D's got the world on a string, if you know what I mean.
Nah.
He says, ever since I got in NXT, I backed up everything I said I was gonna do. I just took care of that Stunad Andre Chase. Hey, I guess I'm head of the class now, huh? He says, in a war game,
the valedictorian.
I said I was gonna smack that tea and crumpet goof Pete Dunne right in his mouth. And this, of course, brings out Pete Dunne. He says, you talking up with someone without track record. By the way, just a complete... oh, my God, we're going so off on a tangent. Have you seen the clip that was doing the rounds on Twitter over the weekend of the Aston Villa? Aston Villa, for our American listeners, play in the Midlands, where Pete Dunne's from, where they've got this accent. The Aston Villa reporting asking Jurgen Klopp a question.
And I see this.
You're right, Jurgen. I just want to see what you think about what the Villa players were like today. And he just looks, because it's on a Zoom thing, it's all safe. And he goes, what?
What?
So that's basically Pete. Are you talking off with someone without track record? I'd love to know how much the Americans can actually understand of him. I mean, it's nice to hear his accent. I love Pete Dunne, but still. So he gets in the ring. He says, oh, you know, you're going to be that confident face to face. Slides in. Tony backs off, obviously. Tony D'Angelo, hey, whoa, where you are? You got quite a mouth on you there, huh? Has anybody ever told you you only got a face a mother could love, huh? You look like you're missing a little something, Petey Poppins. You can say that, I'm just understanding that. Says, take a look in the corner right there, huh? He points to the mouthpiece. I bet you won that back, huh? And then you come in this ring, you come to my ring, and you want to fight me? I'm actually writing this better than what he said.
Yeah.
In the winks all this, Pete said, I'm not here to do talking. He just wants to have a fight, basically. He says, hey, take it easy, tough guy. I got business to handle. So next week, maybe we can figure it out, huh? Until then, I did like this line. I got dealings to do with a guy dealing with things. Wonderful. He goes to leave. Doubles back, obviously. Tries to attack Dunne, but Dunne catches the punch, snaps his fingers. Vic Joseph ruins it with a commentary call that I'm not even going to repeat. And Tony rolls to the outside, goes to grab the mouthpiece, but Pete Dunne gets there before him, stamps on the case to smash it open, pops the mouthpiece back in. And I don't know if this was Tony or just a really well-mic'd member of the audience. As he put it in his mouth, I just heard someone go, ugh.
Yeah.
Thoughts? I mean, this is going to be an intriguing match, I suppose.
Yeah, we know why it's set up. It's to get the green limited guy reps with the incredibly talented guy who's going to lose. This is the NXT 2.0 story. How you doing? Tony D'Angelo, Wilborn, I will always love your impression. Mm-hmm. I never want this to be dropped as an element of the podcast, but the bloom is off the rose as it pertains to Tony D'Angelo for me personally.
Okay, personally, that's fine.
But I still love the impressions.
Yeah, obviously.
I mean, it's a bad match. The angle I couldn't give a toss about. Like, I showed him. I've just put the mouth guard back. He's getting a new mouth guard because that's probably...
He also definitely has more than one if he's got any sense.
I mean, he's on an NXT salary, so I don't know for sure. But just getting a new mouth guard. I understand, like, it's a matter of personal pride. That's something that was taken from him. But, like, it's not like, you know... belt. You know, in the belt theft angle, it's not like that. You can't get a replica of a friggin' belt. Then you look like a belt mutant, but like, it's just a mouth guard, and I understand the crack. It's meant to symbolize something was taken away from him, but it's a mouth guard, and it was gross. It's been like a week and a half, man.
Yeah, although I am looking forward, especially from the glimpse that we got, to Pete Dunne snapping all the limbs of Tony D'Angelo and how Tony sells it.
Oh!
I'm fingering here.
Pardon?
Bron Breakker's warming up in the locker room, and I just thought, look at you.
Yes.
Jesus. He's stretching out. Grayson Waller walks in, and Breakker goes, out you go. Piss off. You're not welcome here. Everyone else goes, yeah, you're right. As everyone should be, I'm with Bron Breakker. And Waller says, well, real superstars have got their own locker room anyway.
I love this. Locker room leader veteran Bron Breakker, the head, the judge of wrestlers court, telling a newbie, you can't get changed in here, kid. He's been in for 4 months. I didn't know who Bron Breakker was 4 months ago.
Question?
Yes.
Why was he needing to go in the locker room? Didn't have a match.
Maybe he was on 205 Live.
Is that even a thing anymore?
I don't know. I've got no idea. This is the moment where I thought, right, time for the main event.
Yeah, this is the bit I'm talking about. And I was like, cool. And then obviously you had the Bron Breakker thing, and then that was obviously followed by Bron Breakker's match. No, Boa versus Idris.
I forgot about that. I thought we were going into Jacket Time Grizzled.
No, Boa versus Idris and Ofe first.
Rubbish.
Boa has got the white face paint with the black because he's sort of possessed, I suppose. Although Idris and Ofe got a fair bit of offense in here. Early on, obviously, Boa's in control, hoying him all over the place. Knees to the ribs, butterfly suplex, gets the chin lock, as all possessed characters do. Time for a chin lock, I think. Inoue fights out, hits a nice drop kick right to his face, but Boa cuts him off, does the sort of Meng death grip, drops into his knees, roundhouse kick, 1, 2, 3.
Rubbish. Look, here's the thing. You're meant to be scared of Boa. Was I scared of Boa? No. You're meant to think he's a good or competent wrestler. In his style. Was he? No, it was boring. Move on.
Raquel Gonzalez rants about this needing to end between her and Dakota Kai, and I audibly out loud said, I thought it was over, yes. Raquel. But she says, I used to look at our friendship as a positive, but now I need to end you. Let's finish how we started this, a street fight. So you start with a street fight. I mean, it was just like, I was just like, yep, completely backwards booking. We'll start with a street fight, do some bollocks in the middle, and then end with a street fight. A nice street fight sandwich.
Yeah. I'll do it on the preview.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, so Grayson Waller walks out of the arena. He's forgotten his bag, first of all, but okay, fine. And he comments to the camera that he's a cocky bastard, basically. And then he gets in LA Knight's car, steals LA Knight's car and his woman, and drives off to reveal a battered LA Knight laying by the car, but not before LA Knight rolls over and says, oh, it wasn't even my car. No, he didn't say that, but he stole his car and his woman.
I didn't see the woman there. That's horrendous.
I think there was a woman in the passenger seat.
We might be impacted.
Regardless, he stole his car, that's for certain.
Right. If there's a woman there, that's so bad. Oh, my God, he beat his ass. That's what I like in a boy. Strength.
Bad boy.
Bad boy. Strong boy. I'm wet boy. I'll make myself sick, yeah. Basic, terrible depiction of women.
But he stole his car.
And his babe.
Cheers, please. Right, now it's time for Jacket Time. Off. This is the grizzled young veterans. early on, back and forth, and then they isolate Kushida, work him over. They get to a hot tag for Ikeminjiro. He cleans house. Kushida comes back in, gets a hoverboard lock on Gibson, but then that gets reversed into a nice suplex for a two count. Kushida gets set up for the ticket to ride, fights out of it. The Creed brothers during this, by the way, have come down to watch, and you think, okay, cool. Well, we know this is going. They're going to attack jacket time. Or cost them the match. No, there was a standoff with the Grizzled Young Veterans instead, and the Creed brothers point over their shoulders. They turn around into two dives from Kushida and Ikeminjiro, take him back at ring, or take Drake specifically back into the ring, and hit him with that sort of Swanton reverse DDT for the victory. Grizzled Young Veterans lose again. My heart breaks yet again, but I suppose this means a push for jacket time?
A match, the result of which means no one really got over that function to build a match between two heel teams. What a waste of friggin' time. What stupid booking.
Yeah, are the Creed brothers baby faces now?
I've got no idea.
They were doing so well with them. It was so easy to do as well. Yeah. And then they buggered it up.
I bugger everything up. It's WWE.
No, not quite time for the main event. We've got to have a promo from Bivins hyping up Roderick Strong in the main event when in comes Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams. They come in and mock him about him not being the proper A champion, etc., etc. They say, good luck out there. Don't miss. And Bivins says, well, we don't need luck, but you might do. And then it's revealed there's a drawing made by Dexter Lumis of him chasing Trick Williams, and they look nervous, and there's going to be a match next week.
Cool.
And then we get, I did like this, medical updates on about five different people. Cora Jade's got a re-injured shoulder. Knight has multiple injuries. And Brian Kendrick's got a possible cervical fracture.
Bad Jesus.
News. Main event time, finally. Roderick Strong versus Braun Breaker. And guess what? Roderick Strong's really good at grappling.
Yes.
You were, I'll talk about the match in a second. You and Hamlet, were disappointed, let's say, with Braun Breaker when he had that title match with Tommaso Ciampa. Did this help or hinder his development?
I don't think it did a great deal to help him, to be honest. I thought Roderick Strong was vastly superior to him in this match. There were elements of Braun Breaker being awesome, but at this rate of his progression, you're only ever going to see the elements. There were times, I know I'm doing the analysis phase. You can do the rundown and then we'll just go and have lunch. His vertical leap is astonishing for the Frankensteiner. That was awesome. He's got the fire up spot down pat. I couldn't decide at one point whether he'd really refined his selling or whether Roderick Strong had just gassed him big time.
I was the same. Let's talk about what happened in here, though. Like I said, grappling wise, he's just so good. His show is just, there's this really good wrestler. Oh, wow. Yeah, so this other guy beats him. What? Insane. Anyway, Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams are watching from the William Regal perch thing. Breaker, though, muscle strong up, suplex, nip up. Nice stuff, that. They go to the outside. Strong drops him onto the announcer's table to take us to a break. When we come back, Breaker's fighting out of a front face lock, but he gets hit with the picture-perfect Fireman's Carry gut buster. But he comes back, power slam, those big running shoulders. Strong fights back, does the thing where he runs along the ropes and hits him with those forearms. Hits him with an angle slam for a two count. Top rope superplex into a tiger bomb for another near fall. But then Breaker's fighting back. Frankensteiner's in amongst all this. Strong went for a bulldog. Breaker slams him. Gorilla press slam into a power slam. 1, 2, 3. He is victorious here. And then post-match, in comes Tommaso Ciampa to attack Braun Breaker. Willow's Bell onto the title belt. And he screams to Braun that War Games, you won the battle, but this is the war. Welcome back to the deep end. Shark swim here.
It's not Battle Games. Is it? It's War Games, right? That was my understanding of it. Look, I didn't hate the post-match angle because the idea is Braun Breaker is going to be the top babyface of the brand the second the third referee's count struck. At the end of which I expect Ciampa, they could do a, I don't know, why am I thinking about the future of this? I'm not going to think about it at any point after we press stop. we know they're going to have the match. We know Bron Breakker's the guy. I'm a little bit get to the point at this point. Roderick Strong, he out-wrestled Bron Breakker in this match. Very much so.
He's brilliant.
But Bron Breakker, like, that's not burying Bron Breakker, but just the reality of the situation. Just facts.
Yeah. Hey, Bron, do you get worse at wrestling? No, you're just next to Roderick Strong, as many people would look if they're next to him. But yeah, big things obviously planned for this. Bron Breakker's effectively established properly now as the number one contender, and then he gets taken out by the champion because that's the direction they're heading in for New Year's Evil, one would assume. But an eventful episode of NXT 2.0, to say the least. Do let us know your thoughts on it on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Well, actually, you can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
M. Sidgwick.
You can follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. Make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from. For daily wrestling podcast later on today, we will be sitting down to look ahead to AEW Dynamite. Winter is coming. And if you subscribe, you will get the review of Dynamite tomorrow as soon as it is released. But for now, this has been the NXT 2.0 review. My thanks to Michael Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us. And we will see you soon.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.